The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media. Download Windows Media Player 10 at Microsoft.com/Windows Media. Give us feedback on this podcast or ask tech questions by calling the voicemail hotline at 877-414-5856. That's 877-414-5856 to get your questions answered.
That it's Gohagan, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Gohagan.
Do you get many people mispronouncing that?
Oh, like you wouldn't believe. Well, you know, they pronounce it correctly when they hear it, but when they read it, it gets butchered. And then I probably see my name misspelled 50% of the time.
Now, are you a sushi eater?
Sure.
Is it pronounced Geoduck or Goduck?
I have no idea.
You should know.
I know the Japanese names for, you know, you want the, you know, the Saba, the Ebi, all that, Maguro, all that kind of good stuff.
You like Ebi?
Yeah, you know what, there's, have you ever had something called a shrimp boat?
Can't say that I have.
Shrimp boat is a, they take an ebby, they kind of flay it, split it down the middle, but keep the end sealed, so it turned, and they kind of turn it inside out, so it turns into a little bit of a cup, and then they put a little bit of rice in there, and they put a raw quail egg yolk on the top.
Ooh.
With some, smelt roe, and then, put, Tabasco sauce on the top, oh, and then a little bit of, chopped green onion. Oh man, that's
just stop.
It's like candy,
Michael. You're killing me here. I just had sushi last night, and unfortunately, I wasn't able to sit at the bar. And I'm learning how to kind of let go and let the sushi chef tell me what I'm going to eat instead of telling him or her. And that's a lot of fun.
That's the best way to do it. If you can get in there, and you know, in fact, I prefer to do it that way because I mean, if you think about it, he's the guy that knows what's fresh that day. You know, what he thinks is good. And then particularly when they get to know you, like there's a guy at a local one here that does something interesting with some yellowtail, where he kind of braises it with a blowtorch, and then he takes some jalapeno and slices them like paper thin and puts, it's just amazing stuff.
And you wouldn't find that on the menu normally.
Right, yeah, you don't generally order the jalapeno yellowtail.
So, Michael, your background, you didn't just start doing this podcast one day. You've actually played around with this kind of stuff for a while.
Actually, no. I started with a podcast one day.
That was
exactly
it.
What happened.
Really?
Yeah.
Stop. You're too professional to have just started the podcast one day.
Well, I'll give you the story. The story was I had insurance marketing companies. I'd never, you know, outside of like having a like a tombstone webpage for my company that we paid somebody to develop. I mean, I'd never had a blog, I'd never had a website. And in September of 2004, I bought a new computer, and I was looking for an Apple script for iTunes, and came across something that said you can download this iTunes Apple script and get Adam Curry's daily source code. This was about September 5th or 6th. So Adam had been doing it for less than a month because he started on August 13th of that year. And I was the right age, or I am the right age, to, you know, remember him as the guy that came before Ricky Rackman took over Headbangers Ball. And so, you know, I a little bit of 80s nostalgia, and I followed the link. And if it hadn't been Adam's name, you know, I would have never done that. And I started listening to the show, and within about a week, I was sending him audio comments, and I had business ideas revolving around podcasting from the day I heard it, but I had no experience on the internet. I didn't know how you got a developer. I didn't know how you did any of these things. And so I figured as I was getting more and more excited, and I was sending audio comments both to Adam, to Dave Schlesher, and I was, you know, listening to these shows daily, that I decided to basically, that the only way to really figure out what was going on was to start a... to start one. And this was when there were probably, you know, 30 to 40 people right after you put up your famous post about, you know, what a horrible word it was. This was like in early October. And so I registered a domain probably the first week of October, and the second week of October I put up my first podcast, and I chose something I was passionate about, something that I knew I wasn't going to get bored of talking about. And so in my case, I chose movies. And, you know, it literally, I spent a week up till 2 a.m. each night trying to figure out what RSS was and how somebody built a web log. And, you know, I found all these tutorials and, you know, approached it as a hobby, tried to figure it out. And so in the beginning, it was, you know, it was pretty basic stuff, but I got it up there. And within, you know, it was one of the first kind of non-tech-oriented podcasts. I mean, it to my thinking, it was one of the first shows where it had a very particular purpose. I'm going to get on, we're going to talk about a movie I think you should see. I'm going to tell you a little bit about it, but I'm not going to give away any spoilers. And, you know, it was well accepted, but that's how I started. First, I mean, I'd had, you know, the weblog might have gone up 6 days before the podcast.
So you went from insurance to internet broadcaster in 2 weeks.
It might have been a little, yeah, maybe 4 weeks, but yeah, the because there was the end of September as I was trying to decide what I was going to do, and then, you know, from there it really just kind of took over. It was apparent, I think, to my staff that my head was elsewhere. I was, you know, having people at the office research, you know, who was linking to the site, and, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. And so actually in the spring of this year, an opportunity came up to actually sell my companies, and I did that. So I guess since probably about May of last year, I mean, I've been a full-time podcasting person.
So is it paying the bills?
But yeah, well, you know, I've been fortunate with my work for Disney and some consulting I'm doing for some other companies, you can certainly pay your bills. In my case, though, I've been working on something called PrivateCast, which is a kind of, you know, a very early stage startup, and that's really, you know, that's the business I'm pursuing as kind of a long-term goal.
You say you work for Disney. Is that still happening?
Yes, we produce Wilnick Productions, which was a company I started at the end of last year to... And that's, you know, technically the copyright holder and producer for Real Reviews, as well as Grape Radio. In May of last year, I was contracted to host and produce a series of podcasts relating to the 50th anniversary celebration at Disneyland. It kicked off kind of a worldwide celebration. That was so well received that we were fortunate that they called us back, and we produced a second series in July covering the actual 50th anniversary at the park itself. And then since then, we've gone on to, we now produce a monthly episode for them called the Official Disneyland Resort Podcast. It comes out on a monthly basis. That started in October, and so far we've posted October and November. And in fact, next week I'm heading up to Disney Imagineering to interview, you know, some of the people that come up with these amazing ideas for these attractions.
Wow, that sounds like fun.
I have a 4-year-old son. I have an 18-month-old son. You know, that's the one you say yes to. I mean, there's some nice fringe benefits. We were really fortunate. They invited us to the what's called the Candlelight Processional last weekend, and it's just an amazing event. They do it over 2 days. It happens twice a day in the evening. Dick Van Dyke was the host, and you have about 500 carolers, and it was just, you know, the kids ate it up. It was just a magic experience. Technically, I'm an independent contractor or an outside contractor, but you know, Wilnick has an agreement with Disney to produce these.
Is that something consulting or you know, doing production for other entities who may not be up to speed on these newer technologies and processes? Is that something you would recommend for other folks out there who are either podcasting or thinking about jumping into the game?
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because I did two presentations. At the Portable Media Expo, one for Doug Kay's Podcast Academy, and then I did a second one, which had some harebrained long title about the realities of monetization. And in both those cases, it's obvious that there are lots of financial and revenue models that are starting to develop, or at least you can see the handwriting on the wall and where things are going to go. But it's frankly my belief, outside of a large established media player, which I would even consider somebody like Weblogs Inc. to be, with large distribution and pre-existing relationships with advertisers, I think that a lot of people are really struggling to try to figure out how they're going to monetize their podcast. The real opportunity, as I see it, is that, frankly, your knowledge is worth way more than your audience today. And the reason I say today is I think that eventually some of these other models will get proven. Everybody will kind of figure out what the... you know, kind of what the standard operating procedure is going to be for revenue models for podcasting. But as of today, there are so many companies who want to get involved, and it's overwhelming. And that's obvious in some of the podcasts you see the companies producing. You know, I did an NPR interview the other day. I'm sure there'll be hell to pay for this. But, you know, I said, look, General Motors needs to be congratulated for doing a podcast. They also need to have somebody inside their internal offices have their head examined for producing audio with a dynamic, engaging person like Bob Lutz, and the only thing in the file in the ID3 tag says Lutz3. I mean, that's something that you and I and everybody else in podcasting figured out last October. And the fact that that file is going out there, and all of those marketing opportunities with the, you know, how to contact them, where the website is, album artwork, they may sound like little things, but they're the things that the basic podcaster, you know, literally sitting on the edge of their bed at night recording a podcast, already know. how in the world can General Motors not know that? The reality is it's because, you know, there's a PR firm doing it. And they got involved, and it's a buzzword and customer engagement, so they got excited. So I think that, you know, going back to that, I think they should get a huge pat on the back for producing great content and making it freely available. I also think, though, that that's where just some basic consulting, paying a few extra dollars to have somebody come in and say, look, this is what a listener is going to expect. This is how you make sure it's formatted. This is, so that essentially when it comes down, it's wrapped and dressed and looks like a podcast, walks like a podcast, and sounds like a podcast. And I think that there's a lot of value for that.
Is podcasting going to be around in another 5 years?
Yes. I think podcasting is going to be around another 5 years. I think the kind of the video podcast that, vlogging, video, I think all of those mediums are evolving, and they're all going to find their footing. You know, it's this overused democratization term, but the fact that somebody can sit in their house or their office and produce audio content that has a further reach than the most powerful broadcast tower in the world, to me, is electrifying. It's something that I just can't conceive of. And when we first did the Real Reviews, I think within like 4 hours I had an email from somebody in Denmark. I mean, that's powerful stuff, that it's got a worldwide reach. We find with Grape Radio, we have people from all over the world, you know, contacting us. In fact, we were making a joke. The only place we think we don't have a listener right now is in Norway. So we were trying to figure out how we get listeners in Norway. I mean, the fact that we're doing that from our studio and it has that kind of reach is really powerful. And I think as a result, that's the kind of thing that's going to allow it to have staying power. Also, the fact that the barrier to entry is so unbelievably low that you get this flood of content. And as a result, there's going to be good stuff, there's going to be bad stuff. But in all things, obviously, at the end of the day, content is what matters most. And that's the thing that's going to rise to the top.
I don't know. I think it's going to eat itself.
Well, you know, that's kind of like, I'm sure people are having these exact same conversations about blogs, which, you know, I don't consider myself an authority or an expert on. But I'm sure a few years ago people were saying, look, you know, all of these online journals aren't going to go anywhere. They're going to, you know, there's going to be millions of them, and they're all going to get lost in the noise. The reality is, yeah, there are millions of them, but a few of them kind of stand head and shoulders above the rest. I think you're also going to see radio start to look at podcasting as somewhat of a farm league. I think you're going to see some people start to make some jumps over to what I guess would be referred to at least, you know, currently as more established media with a slightly larger, demographic currently. So I think you'll see some people go to satellite. I think you'll see some people get picked up by local radio, assuming that was of some interest to them. But I think you're going to find a lot of people that really enjoy the spoken word. I mean, I hate to type. I would never do movie reviews if I had to write them. But I'm much more confident in turning on the microphone and talking. We'll have to check back in 5 years and see who was right.
I have a feeling we'll both be right. And I'm playing devil's advocate, but there's a certain amount of truth. I've seen such a tremendous rush for a buzzword that everybody kind of latches onto this idea that, oh, this is the next best thing. But it's not as easy as it could or should be. Right now, it's still a pain in the ass.
Yeah, and admittedly so, it's much easier today than it was this time last year.
I agree.
And that will continue. But there's a certain level of complexity to all of this. But, I mean, let me ask you this, Chris. Have you ever seen anything in your online experience that has had such a hockey stick adoption growth curve as this?
No. Quite honestly, no.
That tells me there's something there.
Well, no. I think what it was the media did not want to fall behind on another buzzword. So they latched onto it and took the ball.
Right, but it was also, at the same time, I think it was fueled by the people that, you know, every day there was somebody new saying, I'm going to give this a try. Now, it is very different today. I would have told you that this time last year, I can tell you that my very conscious decision when I did a podcast was, I got nothing to lose. I'm going to put this up there. There's 40 of these things out there. Nobody knows who I am. If this, falls flat on its face, you know, who cares? Now it is a, you know, much more competitive. There's all of the genre categories for the most part seem to have at least one player, if not 100 players in them. And so I think starting today, it's much tougher to aggregate an audience. As a result, I think you're seeing people go about it slightly differently. A lot more personal podcasts. Some people that are just kind of sharing with friends and families and small groups, and some people that are really approaching it from a professional production level.
Apple is making the biggest inroads in working with car manufacturers. When that iPod connector comes standard in every car, that's not a luxury. That's like a necessity. That's like an AM/FM iPod connector type of scenario.
Well, and, you know, Tim Berkwin always says he bought that Nissan truck because of the line-in.
Getting a line-in installed, and I've never done it before, but allegedly it's a simple process.
Well, I'm sure it is, but, you know, and I think he's making that somewhat half-jokingly, but it was already set. You just plugged it in and went. And so
but
I agree.
Still,
I think that that's important.
It's still too much of a kludge, and this is where, you know, 5 years down the road, I would hope it would get easier, but as it gets easier, and you even mentioned the barriers to entry get lower, we end up with a signal-to-noise ratio that is just astronomical. I mean, I can't even keep up with it now. I mean, vlogging, blogging, podcasting, it's great that everybody is publishing their thoughts. I equate it to like the movie Bruce Almighty, where God hears all these voices and he can't figure, well, not God, it's Bruce,
right.
Or Bruce as God, hears all these voices and he can't make sense of any of them. And I think we're sitting right in the middle of it right now.
Well, how would you equate that as being different than the current state of blogs, or do you put those
together?
I don't.
I put them together.
Okay.
When I started Locker Gnome back in 1996, there weren't a lot of publishers out there. I mean, there were. Just a handful. I mean, we probably knew each other. I mean, it was that small of a group. And we were each doing our own thing. And then, of course, the internet exploded, which was great because it helped, you know, adoption, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I look at what's happening now, and there is just so much noise and so many people and so many things to follow that it's impossible to keep up on everything and feel like you're still in the loop. I mean, there's so much going on. It's literally information overload. And I love it. I love throwing myself in there. I love being a part of it. But at the same time, it's frustrating. It's extremely frustrating.
Well, would you agree with the idea, though, that obviously when podcasting first started, there was a kind of a rush on that, you know, you listened to 25 shows a week, or, you know, every single day you were listening to, you know, the Daily Source Code and Trade Secrets if it came out, you know, whatever the you know, podcast du jour was, Dave Schlesser, et cetera. And then, I mean, I do find, though, that now as it's matured a little bit and we're a year later, my subscription list is much, much smaller than it used to be. But the ones that I do listen to, I listen to. Now, it might only be four or five, but those are the ones that, you know, I find most interesting. And the rest are the ones that you occasionally kind of sample when somebody points you to it. But I think that as the number of people that are out there consuming this content continues to expand, that might be, you know, more than enough to support the whole thing. That if, you know, a certain percentage of the population is listening to 2 to 5 of these things a week, you know, that's a lot of ears.
You know who dominates my podcast list?
Yourself?
No. No, come myself. I only have one feed. What am I going to do?
I don't know.
Yes, I'm 100% of my list. NPR. NPR.
Yeah.
And
good content.
It's the quality production. It's the content. It's knowing that even if I may not be interested, it's going to sound good. And mm-hmm. I feel that affinity to the network. And quite honestly, I've lived in various places, but I've never listened to NPR as much as I have since moving to Seattle.
With a dedicated editing staff, they make everybody sound like they're in a tweed smoking jacket.
And that's exactly what's going to separate the wheat from the chaff. I think it's the quality
of
the production.
I mean, in fact, I made, you know, when I did this interview the other day with NPR, the way that we did it was I went down in my, where I've got all my recording stuff in the basement. I have a digital hybrid. I got them on the phone, and we did a 45-minute interview with me recording it on my podcast setup. And then I stripped out their audio because I recorded on 2 different channels and just shipped them a WAV file of all my answers. But I did include, along with the email, please make me sound like I'm in a tweed smoking jacket. You know,
they usually
do. NPR polish.
No, NPR usually does that.
I made the lady guarantee.
it's all in the audio editing.
Yeah, I want the NPR polish, please.
So do you find it a struggle to come up with content every time you do a show?
Well, I don't, you know, in the beginning I was producing real reviews every, you know, I was doing like 1 to 2 a week. Now it is much more, I probably get about two to three out a month right now. But, you know, that's a good pace for me because in my case, I don't want to do it unless there's a movie I'm excited about talking about. And so, you know, I really wait until there's something that this kind of film that I watch, and 3 days later I can't shake it from my head. I mean, I want them to be good. I want them to measure up to the current catalog. And but you know, the other thing that I've always really worked on a bit was the audio quality. I agree with you. I think that the better it sounds, the more easy it is for people to adopt it. And frankly, I I'm just kind of an audiophile by nature, so I had no audio background from a technical production angle, or I didn't know how you record this stuff or what you do with it. And I agree, though. I think that spending time and attention on that, can help you, stand a bit above the others.
How has your family reacted?
How has my family reacted? Well, I think in the beginning, my wife was wondering, what I was doing down in the basement each night, talking into this microphone. And then, about a week later, we had an article appeared in the New York Times. And I was fortunate enough to be included in that. And I think at that point she figured, something's going on. And, now it's normal stuff. I mean, we've got, digital audio equipment laying all over the house now, and it's, just kind of the standard operating procedure at this point.
What about your kids?
It's funny. The other day my son pointed out that I am, that when I go to Disneyland, I do it because I go to podcast. So I don't know, I never purposely explained it to him, but I think he's picked it up. Also, it's, when you have a four-year-old and you're going to Disneyland, you have to find ways to explain where you're going without saying it out loud. So, I'm going to work. I'm, going to that place. But he figures it out, because I come back with, little mouse ears and stuff for him.
How does Disney measure its success?
Well, obviously, there's a couple things going on there. First of all, Disneyland itself, I think, has made, and that's who I produce for. I produce for the resort in Anaheim, which is the park that everybody thinks of and the hotels there. I think at this point, they're really looking at it as an extension of a way to communicate with their guests and Disney fans worldwide. It's a way to kind of share what's going on at the resort. I don't think at this point they're necessarily saying, did we produce X and how many extra guests came through the gates at this point. Obviously, as things mature, there's going to be a value decision made there on whether or not it's a way to engage the audience. At this point, though, particularly back in May, the last number I saw was that those first podcasts in May, got pulled about 68,000 times. That was the last number I saw. And I think that they counted that as a success. I mean, the fact that 68,000 people, intentionally pulled 3 45-minute long audio pieces talking all about, what is admittedly one of the just, neat places on the planet in the fact of Disneyland. We got so much great email, too, of people that really enjoyed it. A lot of people say they listen to it on the way to the park. I had a couple people from Northern California said they, loaded them up and listened to them while they were driving down the 5 to head to Disneyland. So I think at that point, there's a, at some point, if you're just helping to build the brand, if you're helping to reinforce the identity, particularly in the case of something like Disneyland, I think all of that can be figured into the equation.
I'm assuming you're familiar with what Fox is doing with their Foxcasts.
Right.
What do you think?
I've only listened to one. And I listened to, I think it's called The Family Guy.
Oh, wait. Are you telling me you don't know anything about The Family Guy?
I don't know anything about The Family Guy.
This interview's over. We're done. No. You've lost all street cred with me.
Let me tell you what I do know about The Family Guy. Unless they've changed something in the last 4 weeks, I can't figure out what in the world they think they're doing. Because what I heard was somebody basically giving you a blow-by-blow synopsis of what somebody does during the episode. And maybe I'm really missing it, but I mean, it was just inane. I couldn't stand it.
That is what most of the Fox casts are. Now, The Family Guy, it's interesting you would say that. The Family Guy directors, producers, et cetera, the people who work on the show, have actually taken the ball and are running with it.
Oh, okay. Well, then, like I said, I probably pulled this thing 5 weeks ago.
No, and you did. They've just recently started doing this, where they'll all get into a room and they all talk. Allegedly, they're talking about the show, and then it just ends up going into this banter that is completely off topic. But it's still interesting. It's the conversation. It's knowing that these are the people who work on a show that I happen to enjoy. I'm a Family Guy fan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems to be terribly popular. I hear about it all the time.
It's been popular for ages, and Fox, figured it out after their DVD sales were through the roof, after they had yanked the show off the air, and then they later brought it back because of the DVD sales. Most of what Fox is doing, however, is just like you said, they're giving basically a play-by-play of what's going on in these shows. They're advertisements.
Right.
They're missing the boat entirely, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, ideally, I think in the case of a show, I'm one of the guys that actually listens to the commentary track on movies. Just because I'm a film nut, and I want to hear all of the interesting stories and you know, particularly when they get to the stuff that you know they don't like to talk about, like who was originally cast for a role, you know, that kind of stuff. You notice in common, and very rarely do you get a director that'll really tell you, well, we went for this person and they said no. You know, because nobody wants to insult or, you know, cause anybody to second guess, you know, who's actually on the cast now. But to me, that's the neat stuff. And particularly, you know, if you look at some of the Kevin Smith stuff where he gets five or six people in the room, you know, with Ben Affleck and Jason Mewes and all those guys, and they talk about making the film, you know, it doesn't always hit. But when it does, I mean, that's great stuff. And if that's what they're doing with Family Guy now, then, you know, bravo. You know, going back to the General Motors example, I think the very first one they put up was a audio from essentially a corporate kind of car unveiling, where I think the person was spending a bunch of time talking about what the car looked like. You know, it just wasn't audio medium kind of stuff. It was, you know, should have been something that was involved in video. I think that if you can start to get, everybody wants, they want exclusive content. I mean, they want something that's podcast specific and that you can't get it anywhere else. And getting a bunch of people in a room to talk about something they got a passion about, I mean, ultimately, that's what podcasting is. I mean, you know, I get on the mic and talk about films that I'm excited about. At Grape Radio, we get down, we're fortunate enough to sit down with world-class winemakers and talk about something that, you know, all of those hosts have a passion about. And it's that passion, that excitement, that enthusiasm that I truly believe really makes its way through the bits and bytes of the, you know, backbone of the internet and ends up at the person's computer or iPod or however they're consuming it. And I think that's when you get that kind of magic spark, the thing that somebody keeps coming back to. And so while every TV show and every movie might not necessarily be set up like that, I think that there's enough of them out there that you're going to see some great content really rise to the top, hopefully. I mean, you have this whole Battlestar Galactica that became very popular because somebody on the staff, in that case I believe it was a director, had a real passion for it and got excited about it and kind of became, you know, the in-house, you know, person that was pushing the whole initiative forward. The one thing that concerned me with Fox was that Family Guy thing was rated so highly on iTunes and everywhere else, it's kind of hard to have this, you know, what from the outside would appear to be an incredibly popular and successful podcast, and at the same time try to convince them that it's going the complete wrong way. You know, it's hard to argue with success, so to speak. And you know, if you have a bunch of executives saying, well, you know, we're a top-rated show, what do you mean it's no good? So I'm glad somebody got in there.
In terms of percentages, do you think that more traditional media are going to be adopting podcasting as part of their roster of things that they need to do? Or is it going to be more independents? Which one do you think is going to carry a higher percentage? Obviously, they're disproportionate.
On a percentage basis, yeah, there are way more independents, you know, so to speak, than large established media players. If you're talking about, you know, the majority of the spotlight, though, I would say yes, you know, established media will continue to... I mean, if you think about it, they turn it on and they, you know, put their PR department on press releases and they leverage it across their existing web, you know, networks and websites, which get high traffic. And if they decide to put it on the front page, it's going to attract eyeballs and listeners. And, you know, a lot of them have exclusive deals with iTunes that guarantee placement. So, you know, obviously from a spotlight or kind of an eyeball or, you know, content perspective, I think you'll see a lot of that from established media. Also, you know, a lot of them are already in a, you know, if you take the Ebert and Roper reviews, I think that's a great use of podcasting because that's a TV show that you can't always watch. Interestingly enough, even without clips, it still kind of works, and that, you know, you can listen to that on your Monday morning commute. So, you know, in that case, what's the level of complexity for them to strip the audio, turn it into an MP3, and post it on a website? I mean, that's a no-brainer. I think where it gets a little more difficult is the ones that need to actually go out and produce the show. But, I mean, I can just tell you from the phone calls I get, every single company, if this isn't on their plate now, I mean, there's a PR company coming in for a meeting talking about, you know, customer engagement and new media and ways to reach out and ways to basically that some of these big companies are really struggling with this whole transition from being able to establish a message and broadcast it out and have that as the established medium where, you know, now you have your consumer has the ability to talk back. And that's a new paradigm for these guys. I mean, there's a really overused word, but that's a new relationship where the consumer is getting more and more control and can turn you on and off much easier. that's not the way it was just 5 years ago. And so as a result, I think that's why you see these companies going in with blogs and with podcasting. But podcasting is much more tolerable for them, in my opinion, than a blog. Because a blog establishes this whole idea of the person being able to write back, and that gets a little sketchy for some of these companies. A podcast is still a way to engage somebody, but ultimately it is a little more one-sided in the sense that here's the show, it's produced and goes out. So I think that you'll see a lot of them start to produce this content, and you know, as they become more and more kind of comfortable with it, I think you'll see a lot more, and obviously many companies have already established blogs, but I think you'll see more and more companies kind of move into that realm.
There's so many, well, pardon the word, assholes out there. Because of the anonymity, or the alleged anonymity of the internet, it's easier to get away with a negative comment and a non-constructive comment.
Sure.
It was kind of funny, actually. The other day, I had, I don't know what I had posted. Oh, it was when I had started talking about the videos that Ponzi and I are now doing. And having posted this, you're going to love this. Someone took the time to write, you know, a lengthy note about how he was never going to read me again and never going to look at anything I ever did again and, you know, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. I deleted the comment. Well, no, it gets better. 5 minutes later. 5 minutes later, he said, "Well, I'm reposting this comment, you know, because you apparently deleted the old one." I'm thinking, you know, I would love to call this guy out, but I didn't have to because someone else did anonymously, saying, "Dude, shut up! You just said you weren't going to come back again, and yet you came back." People are like that.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, you take a risk any time that you kind of put yourself out there. Obviously, you know, I did a review of a movie called Ron. And I love this film. I am not proficient, though, in Japanese, nor am I a perfect pronouncer of all words Japanese. And so there's another movie, and I'm still not even clear on it. I guess it's Kajimusha rather than Kajimusha. And I actually had somebody post just saying, you know, I could barely listen to your review because you were not pronouncing the movie with a hard G, and if you knew anything about Japanese, all right, next. I mean, you know, I guess if you are a Japanese speaker, I could see that. And that's why anytime I do a French film, you know, I start writing the names down because I just know I'm going to blow it. But, you know, that's part of it. And obviously, that's not kind of extreme. I think the most extreme experience I've had this year was this brouhaha that developed, with Netflix. And I had applied for Netflix for their affiliate program. And they summarily turned me down. I just got an email back, said no. I thought, well, that's kind of weird. I mean, all I do is talk about DVDs, and, you know, people are always posting about how they're going to add it to their Netflix queue. This would seem like a good fit. So I waited like a couple months again, and then I figured, well, you know what, I'll just reapply now. And I reapplied, and right away got turned down for a laundry list of things that had nothing to do with my site. Apparently I either had offensive religious content, swearing, pornographic images. And I'm just like, did anybody look at my site? None of this stuff applies. So the resolution process is you write an email and you ask them and all that stuff. And you know what? I put up a post. Netflix turned me down twice. They sent this dumb letter that gives a million reasons that don't apply. And this just doesn't make sense. So there's a blogger who got very upset, or at least I perceive he did, Molly something. And you know, basically said, you know, you should have gone through the resolution process, and this is a misuse of blogs and citizen journalism and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I found it interesting because there was a disconnect between how I viewed my site and how somebody else was viewing my site. Somebody else was viewing it as kind of an important, you know, this idea of the blog as an important communication or journalism or, you know, whatever you might. I'm a podcaster that's got a blog so that I can post my podcast. And I've never really thought of my blog as an important, you know, I don't sit down to use it the way that some other people do. And I think that's one of the neat things about blogs. It can be your own personal space, or, you know, you can be trying to compete with the New York Times or something. But it was interesting. He went back and forth on, how I should have gone through customer service. And so in this case, I really didn't see it was my job to spend an extra 4 hours to try to find out why they're turning me down. So anyways, just for giggles, during the middle of the summer, I figured, all right, I'm going to go ahead and send an email and ask them why they've turned me down twice. So I did, and I got a very nice response from them a couple days later. And they turned me down for something that had nothing to do with their letter, had nothing to do with any of the reasons they had told me. I had marked down, as I thought I should, that I allow downloads because of the podcast. And they said, well, we summarily turn everybody down if they say download. Sorry about that. You can now be an affiliate. But that was kind of my point. Why in the world didn't the letter say that? You know, that's my only real experience with somebody getting a little upset with me. But it was kind of neat, you know. I don't know. I guess I was, maybe I was scratching the right place if it caused a little controversy.
French movies, Japanese movies, Disney. Tell me, what's your favorite genre?
My favorite genre? I don't know that you can call it a genre, guy films. I love Sam Peckinpah films. You know, one of my all-time favorite film is Citizen Kane. You know, in the top 10, I've got like Citizen Kane, Seven Samurai, Godfather 2. The Wild Bunch. And so there's, you know, there's probably some underlying current there of, you know, kind of, I'm not real big on the kind of the touchy-feely films. But those would be, I don't know how you explain it, strong director films, I guess. You know, somebody where there's a solid hand at work and you can tell that there's a plan. But, you know, one of the nice things is at least in every genre, you know, there's something to be appreciated.
So you're a Kubrick kind of guy?
Yes, I'm a Kubrick kind of guy. In fact, I just got this amazing book. It's the biggest book I've ever bought. It's like a 30-pound book. And, I mean, I don't think it's not a coffee table book. I mean, it's as big as a coffee table. And it actually comes with some original 2001 frames from Kubrick's one of his personal prints of the film, 70-millimeter prints, right in the front. I think it's from Tashin, which apparently is a, you know, I guess if you're into nice books, they produce a lot of these. And it is hundreds of pages long. And I, you know, sometimes I'll just sit down at night and sit with that book and flip through it, because the beginning are all kinds of great prints from the interpositive from every single film in chronological order, everything Kubrick did. And then the back section of the book are all the production notes and stories and photographs. They sent somebody into his private collection, and it's just scans of his handwriting and his notes and just all kinds of great still photos. And I mean, it's just a rich, rich library of everything Kubrick. Just a great way to spend an evening.
You mean with the book?
Yes.
Okay. You didn't know, you know, I didn't want to make any inference there.
Well, you know, if you're a film guy, like when I went on, we went to Hawaii, and, you know, everybody else is reading their kind of, you know, thriller, and I'm reading, you know, a Sam Peckinpah biography called If They Move, Kill 'Em, or Sam Fuller's, you know, A Third Face. I mean, you know, everybody's got their hobby.
Oh, of course. And speaking of hobby, do you have any films lined up for today?
Yeah, you know, actually, it's funny you mention that. I'm really excited about a movie I'm going to watch tonight called Murder Ball.
Oh!
Have you heard of this film?
Yes, I have.
Have you seen it?
I have not.
Yeah, it's about, apparently it's...
but
it's,
I have heard of it.
I'm sorry, yeah, it's about, I hope I have this right, but I'm not sure if it's paraplegic, but people that are in wheelchairs that play wheelchair rugby. And, I mean, it just, I remember the trailers, and I hardly ever go to the movies. I always wait for them to come out on DVD, but I'm excited. It's gotten so much great press, and from some of the interviews you've seen, I mean, it looks like just a great kind of documentary, so I'm looking forward to that.
What does it take to get you to get out of your sofa, or Davenport, or couch, whatever you call it there in Newport Beach,
right,
and into the movie theater if you don't often go?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, I'm pretty fortunate. We actually built the house that we live in now, and when we did, we put a basement in, and so the basement's got like we built a standalone theater down there, and you know it's all set up to project movies with perfect audio and nice sound. And you know, nobody sitting behind you chomping on popcorn or having their cell phone go off. So when I go to the movies, it's either because there's a group of people going, or we're on vacation and everybody wants to go out, or frankly that it's something it's a special event where you're there for the movie, but you're also there for the event. I mean, once you've, you know, and I think that's why you're seeing, like, what was Steven Soderbergh, you know, where they're going to release it theatrically on DVD and cable all at the same time. That's that whole thing Mark Cuban's looking at now. And even Bob Iger over at Disney is talking about, you know, closing the release window and putting more content and letting the consumer decide about where they're going to consume it. Obviously, you know, theater goers or theater owners aren't terribly excited about that. But you know, attendance in movie theaters is continuing to fall as more and more people are putting in, you know, home entertainment systems where you can control the experience. And then when you get things like kids involved, the fact that you can pause the movie, you know, I mean, that's a solid selling point at some point. Obviously, you know, if I were a single guy and, you know, I don't know, dating or something, then maybe the movie theater is a little more exciting.
I think it's a compelling argument to make in purchasing a movie ticket for, let's say, you and a friend or mm-hmm. your significant other, to also receive a print copy of it, a DVD, on your way.
Oh, that's an interesting idea. I thought of that, Chris. But to give you an example, we're having a movie night here on Friday. We've got a bunch of friends coming over, and, you know, we'll all go down there and watch a film. And, you know, we've got a pool table down there, and everybody will have some drinks, you know, and then watch a film. And a lot of times we'll do something where it's kind of themed, like, the last movie night we had was Scarface. And so everybody had to wear kind of like a really loud kind of Hawaiian shirt, and we all drank Cuba Libres. You know, I try to have some fun with it.
Apparently. Well, with your favorite movie being Godfather 2.
Well, my favorite movie is Citizen Kane, but I prefer Godfather 2 to 1.
I knew it was in there.
They're both great.
So you weren't a 3 fan.
No, you know, it's funny. Godfather was the film that you know, Coppola wanted to make. 2 was the film he didn't want to make, and Godfather 3 was the film he needed to make, you know, for financial reasons. Hmm. Interestingly, to me, you know, it's that whole thing between Fredo and Michael, and it's just great stuff.
Well, we'll leave you to your movie theater at home with your drinks and pool table and friends.
Well, thanks for having me.
Live streaming of The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media and Limelight Networks. Download Windows Media Player 10 to listen to The Chris Perillo Show live every Thursday from 6 to 9 p.m. Pacific, GMT-8.